From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the fifth day of July 2017. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's from Stuart Peterson. We'll discuss the RFS as it's being thought about in Washington, D.C., potential release today from the Trump administration and U.S. EPA under Mr. Pruitt. And we'll take that up, of course, with Scott Irwin, University of Illinois agricultural economist. We'll also discuss what's happening in the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this fifth day of July. We're now joined by Jackie Vink. She's at Stuart Peterson. Thanks, Jackie, for being with us. What a wild day in Chicago. I want to start with the spring wheat numbers. Those things have been going up, 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 up until today, at least. And then they still went up for a while.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, well, I think, you know, if you look at the market, it is such a good reflection of weather. And the idea that we didn't get as much planted. You know, you looked at the acreage report on the wheat side of things. We know we lost acreage. We know that this is really tough on everything that's going on. It's dry up there. You know, there's just so many things to fuel a short covering rally. And we certainly have seen it. And, of course, what do we always say? FGE, fear, greed, and emotion are what run the market. You know, and that's very, very obvious in that wheat market at this point in time.
Well, let's stay with the acreage for just a second, and then we'll come back and maybe take a look at the grain stocks as well. But what did you see in the acreage reports last week?
Well, you know, of course, corn came in higher than the average guess by a million acres, but it's obvious that the market isn't really paying attention to that right now. You know, what they're paying attention to is the hot temperatures, everything that's going on, a typical beginning of July situation when you have this. But I think it's interesting if you look at the bigger picture, if you use the acreage that they came in with and look at what their deviation is, you still could be as high as 92.25 million acres or as low as 89.5. That's how much of a deviation there is there. Now, it's not as big as last month's, but there's still a big question as to what's going to happen. And you look at the beans, you know, beans came in actually a little bit tighter than the average guess. But even at that, there the deviation was higher. And so you could still be looking at 91.6 million acres or 87.5. So I guess the point is this. We have to be very careful about taking these numbers as written in stone. You know, they really don't know. We don't have the prevented plant numbers at this point in time. We don't have any of it. And so, you know, we did lose wheat acres and a significant amount of loss compared to last year, you know, over 4 million acres. So that's the question. Did we switch those acres? And is this weather where we would have switched the acres, you know, Minnesota and part of the Dakotas, is that going to be enough, you know, to offset some of the prevent plant acres that we've actually seen in corn?
Can you take a quick look at the grain stocks for me as well, and then look forward into the July WASDE numbers, which are due next week?
You know, you look at the grain stocks, I don't see it as anything other than was pretty much expected. You know, we did come in higher on corn at 5.2 billion versus 5.16. You know, that's significant, but not outrageous when you consider the size of the crop last year. Beans came in a little bit tighter. Wheat came in just slightly higher. You know, and disappearance was really better than last year in this past quarter. And so it just couldn't overcome the size of last year's crop. You know, it wasn't possible. Now, when you look at corn that's in farmers' hands, according to this report, 54.4% of last year's corn is in farmers' hands, compared to 52.5% at this time last year. And when we look at beans, 34.5% compared to 32% last year. So, you know, we still have grain that has to be moved. There's just no question about it. It's what's it going to take to do it? You know, the rally that we have going on is most definitely should be encouraging people, but I'm not sure it's going to be enough to encourage people. They've got an idea in their mind what they want, and they may just keep on hanging on. So you said the WASDE report, Todd. You know, we look at that. That's coming up next week, Wednesday. And so don't have really any guesses on it yet, but we did that research again. And in the last 16 years, we've seen the July report be 65% positive for corn. And on average, it went up 6 cents. When it was negative, it went down 6 cents. You know, so pretty, not much. Let's put it that way. 2 weeks after, 82% negative, but only a half cent change. When you look at beans, 71% of the time, this is a positive report, and it goes up 10. If it's been negative, it's gone down 18. And 2 weeks after, 65% of the time, it's negative. So and goes down a penny and a half, you know, so an additional penny and a half. So it's one of those things, I guess, that says that as we come into the quandary that we had last week Friday, you know, with all of the different reports going on, as the market has the ability to digest and as we get further into pollination, you know, if we're truly in a drought situation, well, then that probably blows a lot of this out of the water. But if we're not, it more or less says the market settles down after 2 weeks and really has a feel for where it wants to go.
If we're not, it settles down after 2 weeks, has a feel where we are in the United States, and a crop has already come out of South America.
Right, right. You know, and I did a little bit of looking at, you know, basically acres and production in the U.S. versus South America. I think it's kind of, you know, we always hear that we're the corn country and they're the bean country. Well, it turns out that when you look at it, it's absolutely true. We produce about 2.8 times as much corn as Brazil and Argentina combined. But, you know, the average for South America is only 102 bushels to the acre. You know, and so that's because they plant a lot of safrina corn, you know, double crop corn. But if they ever get that higher, you know, they'll begin to challenge us because of the amount of acres that they have. South America produces 1.5 times as many beans as the U.S. on average. And they're closer to us. You know, they average about 44.5 bushels to the acre on beans. So they're pretty impressive at that point. But, you know, it's quite something when you actually sit down and look at the acreage that's involved down there compared to us. You know, I'm proud of the U.S. farmers. You know, I'm not saying that they do a bad job down there, but we do one heck of a job from an efficiency standpoint and a production standpoint.
Any other items before I let you go for the day?
Well, I would like to talk a little bit. You know, farmer selling continues to be slow down in South America, and I want all of our listeners to pay attention because the real is weakening against the dollar. It's currently at 3.30. Last week, on the 29th, last Thursday, it was only at 3.17. So what does that mean? Okay, $9.80 beans gets them 32.34 real for every bushel today, versus 31.06 real last week. So, you know, and this has been an area where they have sold in before. So, you know, I have a feeling that they're just watching this market like crazy.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us.
Thank you, Todd. Have a good one.
You too. That, of course, is Jackie Vakes. She's with Stuart Peterson. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. It's the fifth day of July. The United States Environmental Protection Agency is due to release an updated set of RFS numbers. These are not all that late, but they're a little deferred from the expectations, which were for the month of June. So we're not very far into July. Those numbers haven't been released yet, but at this time, it appears they're going to come out. We have a good handle on them. What do you think they are, Scott Irwin, from here on campus?
Yeah, thanks, Todd. The current media reports, which are likely pretty accurate at this point, says that the conventional ethanol mandate will be 15 billion gallons, like it was in 2017, and that's for 2018, and that the advanced mandate is going to decline slightly from 4.28 billion gallons last year to 4.28 billion gallons for 2017 and will be 4.24 billion gallons for 2018.
And what does all that mean?
Good point. start with the conventional ethanol mandate. That's the really important news, because this is what there was a lot of discussion and debate about. What would the Trump administration do with the ethanol mandate?
And you've said they wouldn't do anything for a long time, just stick with it.
And that's exactly what they did. Because the story is that there were the 2017 rules, which were frozen for a couple months after Trump came into office. And there was a lot of discussion about those. I like the way they say it in the trade. A lot of people that I talked to in the trade expected the ethanol mandate to get kneecapped for 2017. And then they thought, sure, there was a kneecap coming for 2018. This is really important for ethanol, because this was the first true opportunity for the Trump administration to kind of show their colors on ethanol.
And the thought here was that because Pruitt came from an oil state, he's the administrator of the EPA, and many of the folks that are in the cabinet have some kind of relationship also to the oil industry, that Donald Trump and the administration would take a stance that would be more friendly, would be less friendly to ethanol than has been in the past. That's not been the case.
No. And so to me, that's the really big news out of this report, is that the Trump administration and President Trump, I would guess, weighed in on this personally. He's made very clear that he loves ethanol. And so we get a very strong signal that there'll be no kneecapping or backtracking on the corn ethanol mandate going forward.
He's not said so much about loving soybean oil or soy diesel.
Yes. Now, does he even know what that is? It's a good question. And so I have been consistently saying since last fall that the place where they had some actual flexibility was on the advance mandate. And I'll try to explain it as simply as I can. There's a minimum specified in the RFS statutes that about the advance mandate. In 2017, it was 3.5 billion gallons. And they set the advance at 4.28, so 728 million gallons above the minimum, which was essentially the last Obama administration rulemaking for the RFS. What they're proposing now is the minimum has now for 2018 ratcheted up to 4 billion gallons, and they're setting it at 4.24, only 240 million gallons above the minimum. So in that sense, the Trump administration is being substantially less aggressive in moving the advance mandate forward. And this all makes a lot of sense to me, and it's what I've been trying to warn folks. The fundamental of this situation is the Obama administration was very motivated by climate change considerations and therefore wanted to push the advanced biofuels, which they read as having much better climate change mitigation effects compared to corn ethanol. And I think the Trump weights these things just the opposite, in the sense that Trump likes corn ethanol and is not very motivated by climate change issues. So to me, this is a part of stepping back from the Paris Treaty, being substantially less aggressive in setting the advanced mandate volumes in the RFS. They, to me, are fully consistent.
We'll talk more, I know, in the future. Thank you so much, Scott.
Always my pleasure.
Scott Irwin, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. The Trump administration, as of the time of our recording, at about 10 after the hour of 1 o'clock Central Time on Wednesday, had yet to release the actual RFS numbers, but the trade has a pretty good handle on them, and our expectations is that they will be released as discussed. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for the 5th day of July. Drew Lerner is here. Let's get right to it. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. The target is on North Dakota, parts of Montana now. Spring wheat area is driving the marketplace. It's been droughty. What conditions are they under, and what can we expect?
Yeah, we're definitely seeing an expansion of drought. We certainly are looking at a 1988 scenario, at least as far as the level of intensity of the drought in parts of North Dakota and Montana, and for that matter, parts of Saskatchewan as well. Over the past week, we've seen an expansion of the drought into southern Alberta. There is a fairly good chance we'll see it expand a little bit further into east central Alberta and west central sections of Saskatchewan. Up to now, it's been mostly in central and south central and southwest Saskatchewan, but definitely is expanding to the northwest for right now. I also expect this drought to expand to the south, going into Nebraska, and probably becoming more significant in the eastern part of South Dakota. And we've got this stripe of dryness that goes across Iowa still that is very disturbing. They've had less than half of normal rainfall for the past few weeks, and even the previous month was not that great. So western and southern Iowa right now are supposed to be dry for this next 7 days. And temperatures next week will be turning much warmer in the western Corn Belt, so we will see all of this expanding dryness translating into a greater amount of crop stress that may eventually start having an impact on our production potential.
Given all of that, temperatures also play a big role, especially once corn begins to pollinate. Are the high temperatures there, or do we cool off?
They aren't there for the northern plains at the moment. We saw temperatures of 102 degrees last weekend, or actually over the holiday, I guess it was, in eastern parts of Montana, and Bismarck, North Dakota was 102 yesterday afternoon. But as far as getting into the Corn Belt is concerned, I think that a week from now we'll be seeing temperatures pretty high into the 90s. Our lows at night will be in the lower 70s. It will be a stressful period. The big question is how long will it last? And I think the answer to that is that probably not too terribly long, but the ridge of high pressure responsible for all this will briefly expand and into the western Corn Belt a little bit as we get into the second half of next week. And it will probably pull back to the west by the time we get into the mid-month time period, the following weekend. So the heat, it will be stressful for probably 3 or 4 days, I think, and then we'll see a little bit of relief. The thing that concerns me, though, is we may back off on the heat, but the rainfall may not come back to where it needs to be in order to replenish these areas that get a little more stressed. And so the stress may continue, even though the heat is not necessarily as potent as it will be.
Let's check in on some other areas. We'll stay with the wheat-growing areas, corn, too, of the planet. Ukraine is where I'd like to head next.
Yeah, central parts of Ukraine have really dried out in this past week, and mainly because it got hot there last weekend with temperatures well into the 90s. Same thing was true for neighboring areas of Russia's southern region, includes their lower Volga River Basin area. But both these areas are quite dry right now. They're back into a cool weather mode, though. For the next week, I don't think temperatures are going to be very far above average. In fact, they'll be near to slightly below average. The following week, though, we'll see the heat come back, especially in southern Russia. And so the stress will likely increase. Neither of these two areas is going to get much in the way of significant rainfall over the 2 weeks, but there will be a handful of showers in Ukraine as we go forward through the day today and again Friday into Saturday.
And always a player on the world market, at least for importing soybean, China and their weather condition. They don't push much out the door, but they do have a crop for both corn and soybeans.
That's right. And if they have problems, then they're just going to ask for more, right? So the big issue there is that they have dried down, too, over this past week. A notable period of warmer temperatures and pockets of dryness that were present in the previous week now are more widespread problems with dryness. But as I speak right now, it is raining in a part of the dry region, and as we go forward through the next 5 to 6 days, there should be enough rain in much of this drier-biased region to cut it down by at least a half, if not two-thirds. So a lot of that will only be short-term concerns, and as long as they don't get hot and dry again afterwards, they should be at least headed in the right direction for at least some short-term improvement.
Thank you so much, Drew.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm Todd Gleason.